Good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Well, our regularly scheduled guest is not going to be with us. Our early morning guest didn't show up. We had to come up with an extra special guest at the last minute. And the next hour is going to be one we just called today to come on. But I thought maybe what we'd do would be something we don't usually do on this hour, and that is have open lines. And so, if you would like to call us, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I'd like to stay pretty much on the topic that I'm going to be talking about this evening. Today I got from the U.S. Agency for International Development, an American agency dealing with international affairs, a summary of what a great job we're doing controlling AIDS in Africa. And of course, you don't realize this, but the U.S. Census Bureau is down in Africa collecting data so we can find out what a great job our population control program is doing there. And this is what the latest statistics show. In the low-risk population of Botswana, 41.5% of the population are infected, and they're probably all going to die. 65.8% of the high-risk population are infected. In Burundi, 16% low-risk. Central African Republic, 14%. Equatorial Guinea, 10%. Ethiopia, 15%. Kenya, 11%. Lesotho, 35%. Malawi, 27%, Mozambique, 17%, Namibia, 26.7%, South Africa, a very, very highly civilized society. I live there and practice medicine, 36%, Swaziland, 41%. That is either the greatest public health failure of all time or the greatest genocidal success of all time. And since we have a public health policy, and that says we're not going to try to find out who has the disease, and the countries of Africa, we're not going to do routine testing, which can be done very, very cheaply with the OraSure test, which we've had ready for almost, at least 15 years, just a little swab in the inside of the mouth. And you can, of course, do tests quickly, very economically. We're not going to try to find out who has the disease. We're going to pass out defective condoms and tell people to go ahead and do what they're doing anyway. And, of course, they're going to continue dying as a direct result of our public health policy. Not only that, but there are studies in certain of the African countries that show that the disease is not being spread by sexual intercourse, but by other means. For instance, Dr. Gesselquist's work showed that in certain of the studies, up to 40% of HIV-infected children, those would be a pre-adolescent who are not having any sexual relations, their mothers were HIV-positive, but the children were HIV, the mothers were HIV negative, and the children were HIV positive, so they were getting it from needles or vaccines or something, and nobody ever wants to ask what that something was. Well, we have a pretty good idea, because we have the studies here that the young men in the San Francisco area, they were homosexuals, they were idealistic, they were recruited into a scientific study to determine whether or not hepatitis B, a vaccine, an experimental hepatitis B vaccine, would prevent them from getting hepatitis B. And they foolishly volunteered for the government study. And 75% of them contracted AIDS and died. And most of them are already dead. Now, it was that same experimental vaccine that was used throughout Africa in exactly those areas. We see these very, very high rates of disease. And in most of Africa, you do not see these high rates of disease. You do not see these high rates of disease in northern Africa. You only see that where they gave the experimental hepatitis B vaccine. And, of course, that was administered shortly after Dr. MacArthur appeared before the Defense Department Appropriations Committee, and this was in 1969 or June or July, and asked for $10 million so that they could produce a virus or produce a new disease for which there would be no immune response. And as Dr. MacArthur said, many people think we shouldn't do this. It would be another means of mass killing, but we want the $10 million because we want to produce this new disease. He said it would take 5 to 10 years, and, well, that was 1969, and about 10 years later, the first cases of the disease began showing up. Could it possibly be that there was something in the vaccine that was given to the homosexuals in San Francisco, where 75% of them contracted AIDS and died? You're not getting that in homosexual populations today. Could it be something in the vaccine that was given to the people of Africa, that hepatitis B vaccine? Of course, what they do is they've come up with all sorts of other explanations, like it was in the polio vaccine or it was in the smallpox vaccine. All of this is done to throw you off the track, so you'll not be able to think effectively about what's going on in the world today. Well, let me tell you what really motivated me to really want to talk about that. First of all, I think we ought to talk a little bit about vaccines. Now, most people think that they've saved millions and millions of lives, and that is a lie, but a lie told often enough will be, of course, believed. In 1901, why diphtheria killed 48,839 people in the United States. By 1946, when the vaccine was introduced, 467 people died of diphtheria. The incidence of diphtheria dropped 99%. The same thing with whooping cough. Whooping cough in 1901, 33,000 cases. In 1946, 1,400 cases. Tetanus in 1901, 28,000 cases. 1946, 1,697 cases. And it was that year that they, of course, introduced the vaccines to save human lives. Well, certainly every human life is important, but what harm has been done by the vaccines? In 1901, there were 11,956, almost 12,000 cases of measles. By the time the measles vaccine was introduced in 1966, there were 44 deaths from measles. In other words, there were 11,000, almost 12,000 children died of measles in the year 1901. 44 died in 1966. But we have to immunize all the children to save their lives. But you see, were we really saving their lives, or, well, we'll be back here in just a moment to discuss that. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I was just going over the statistics on what happened as far as the vaccines. You have been told over and over again that vaccines have saved millions of lives. Well, the incidence of diphtheria deaths in 1901 diphtheria deaths, 48,000. By the time they got around to introducing the vaccine, it had fallen progressively every year to the point where about 1% of that 48,000 were dying. In other words, 467 people died in 1946 of diphtheria. So this was not a major problem. Pertussis dropped from 33,000 in 1901, died to 1,400 in 1946, and continued falling after that, even though everybody wasn't vaccinated, to the point where in 1966 only 32 people died. Of tetanus, we had in 1901 28,000 deaths. By the time they introduced the vaccine, we had 1,600 deaths. But with measles, that was what was so surprising, and I used to believe what I was told in medical school, the wonderful things that vaccines had done. In 1901, 11,956 children died of measles. By 1966, when the measles vaccine was introduced, why only 44 children died that year? So you have to understand, most of what you've been told about the success of vaccines has simply been used to justify vaccinating children all across America. Now, what is the downside risk? Well, we never used to have children with autism. We never used to have children with attention deficit disorders or attention deficit hyperactivity disorders or with mental deficiency to the degree that we have today. One in every six American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality, according to the CDC's own figures. And there has been recently a tremendous amount of information being put out about autism. Now, you weren't seeing this in the media a year or two ago, but now you're seeing it a coordinated effort within this last month. Time magazine, an article on autism, saying, oh yes, my goodness, you know, there are 1 in 6 children has neurodevelopmental abnormalities. The incidence of autism has increased from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 160 children. But of course, we can assure you it has nothing to do with the vaccines. Of course, there's some people who think it has to do with the mercury in the vaccines, but responsible doctors are saying, oh no, you don't want to go ahead and chelate your children, why it might hurt their kidneys or it might hurt their liver, or no responsible doctor would want to believe there's any relationship between vaccinations and the mercury, the toxic doses of mercury that are in those vaccines. And then, of course, you've seen the same thing on television. You've heard it on radio. You've read it in the newspaper. And there is a concerted effort today to convince the American people there is nothing wrong with vaccines. Now, there's another thing, of course, that they're coming up with. And suddenly we're talking about the terrible threat of the avian bird flu. And, of course, we're told that, do you know that 45 people have died in Thailand of this? And there's one case, it may have even gone from the mother to the daughter or the daughter to the mother. Oh, the Centers for Disease Control is here to protect you. We're coming up with a vaccine that we can give to all the American people to protect them from the danger of the avian flu, which, of course, is really sweeping the chickens and the ducks over in Thailand and in that part of the world. And who knows, it could come here, and we've got to be prepared for it. And so we're preparing a vaccine to protect the American people. But the question is, do the vaccines really protect the American people? Well, we've been told for years that we should take influenza vaccine. Only within the last 2 weeks has reports come out that said, we have found that the influenza vaccine has not saved any lives among the elderly, and yet we're told that this is the group that we have to give it to, and yet, of course, the big problem is that the elderly don't have a good immune system, they don't react well to the vaccine, and of course, there are complications from the vaccine, many people, a significant number of people will get a Guillain-Barré disease and die. That's what happened to Dr. Len Horowitz's mother, and why he's so against the vaccines. And there is a specific number of people who will get Guillain-Barré disease, which is sort of like a poliomyelitis, or they'll get other progressive neurological diseases. But the most frightening statistics comes from a Dr. Fudenberg, who's one of the dean of the vaccinologists. And you can go to his website, or if you don't believe what I'm saying, I would be glad to send you a copy of the abstract from the pages of Dr. Fudenberg's website, where he points out that if you are an elderly person, or you're between 60 and 65, and you take between 3 and 4 influenza shots over a 5-year period, 10 years hence, why your incidence of Alzheimer's disease goes up 1,000%. Why? Well, because of the aluminum and the mercury that is in the influenza vaccine, and it attacks your mind. Now, they've also targeted our children with that, and of course, a child will get approximately the same dose that an adult will. And these children, 6 months of age, will be getting overwhelmingly toxic doses of mercury and aluminum, and they know they're toxic, and they're giving them to the anyway. And you have to ask yourself, why would anybody do that? Well, my concern is that they are preparing us now for the avian flu vaccine. And one of these days, you're going to hear them saying, oh, we're here from the government, we want to protect you, and so we want you to take the avian flu vaccine. Now, we don't have any long-term studies on it, but we can assure you it's safe because, after all, we wouldn't do anything to hurt you. We're from the government. And I would like to suggest you only need to look at those statistics I read you from Africa earlier about what's going on over there as far as the AIDS epidemic to realize that the same public health officials with the World Health Service, and certainly the American Public Health Service worked closely with the World Health Service, and, of course, World Health Organization, and they're supervising the great success we've seen in Africa. Could something similar happen here in America? Well, let's go back into the history of vaccines. Certainly, at the time of the American Revolution, why there was the danger of smallpox, and people actually would take the pus from the smallpox, rub it into their skin, and they vaccinated this long before The initial vaccinations were done by Edward Jenner over in England, and it was recognized that smallpox was a terrible disease, and I think that probably the smallpox immunization was very beneficial. It stopped the terrible plague of smallpox. But because that worked so well, they came up with other ideas. We've got to have a vaccine for every disease. Now, I will tell you that the veterinarians are a lot smarter than the physicians, because they realized 10 years ago that they were vaccinating animals too much, and they cut back, and they're beginning to cut back on the incidence of vaccination of animals because they want to save them. They took the thimerosal, the mercury, out of the vaccines that were given to animals a decade ago, but they're continuing to give it to human beings. Why would that be? Well, you have to understand there really is an agenda, and you only need to go back as they... and read what Bertrand Russell wrote in 1953 in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, on page 50, and that is quoted in my newsletter, in my November newsletter, where he talked about, by the use of diet, injections, and injunctions, we'll be able to mold the character of the people. What was he talking about, diet and injections and injunctions? How was that going to mold the character of the people? Well, have they put something in the diet? Well, as you've heard our programs on fluoride and aspartame, you'll know that both of those affect the mind. But what about in the injections? What would they put in the injections? Why, they're putting aluminum and mercury, which are both very, very neurotoxic. You can't hardly read the paper for a week or two at a time without hearing about the danger of mercury. And, of course, mothers, pregnant women should not be eating mercury because, of course, it's going to poison the brain of their child. But nobody ever mentions that the aluminum fillings in your mouth, the mercury fillings in your mouth, they're 50% mercury. And, of course, that is where the toxic doses of mercury are getting into the mother's system, that are getting passed on to the children. And this is well known. Dr. Boyd Haley has been a frequent guest on our radio programs, testified before the Institute of Medicine, and did a number of other experts on mercury. And Dr. Boyd Haley is a professor of chemistry at the University of Kentucky. He's chairman of the department there. And, of course, other people, three or four of them, testified before the Institute of Medicine hearings about the danger of mercury. And Dr. Haley, of course, talks about the danger of mercury fillings and the danger in the vaccines. And the Institute of Medicine came out with a report and said there's absolutely nothing to worry about. Why? Well, I think there is probably many agendas. One of them, of course, there's a lot of money to be made. But I believe there is another agenda, and I believe that there really are wicked and evil people out there who realize that by diet, injections, and injunctions, we will mold the character of the people of this world and make them submissive as we move towards the New World Order and the New World Religion. And as incredible as that may seem, you only need to look into the past and study history to realize there really are people out there who have a different worldview than you and I. Let's go back to 1931, when they started the Tuskegee study, which ran for 40 years from 1931 to 1941, where 412 black men with syphilis were recruited for a study, not to be treated, but not to be treated. Now, in 1931, there was no good treatment for syphilis, but by 1941, we had penicillin, and they should have treated those people, and they didn't. And by 1968 and 1969, there was a gentleman that we had the privilege of interviewing. He was a pre-law student. He was working up in San Francisco, and when he, working in the public health service up there, heard about this experiment, where they were withholding treatment from these black men so they would die. So they would die, and then they could autopsy them and cut open their brain and look at it. With great glee and satisfaction, he wrote to the CDC and said, "What you're doing is morally wrong." They got together 11 professors of medicine from major universities in America and then said, "Is there anything wrong with what we're doing after all that's being done in the name of science?" And 10 of the professors said, "There's nothing wrong with that." And one professor said, "What you're doing is immoral, illegal. You're killing these men." Well, of course, he was outvoted. It was purely democratic. We'll be back in just a moment to tell you more of some of these incredible stories of what they're doing to you and your children. And you better find out if what we're telling you is true, because if it is, you have to help us get the truth out across America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, talking about the Tuskegee study. If you have never read the book by James Jones, who did the definitive work on Kinsey, we don't carry the book, but we think it's well worthwhile, but we have an excellent four-tape set, probably nothing quite like it anywhere, on the Tuskegee study. People don't like to hear about this, but we have 2 hours story with the man who broke the case. And, of course, we have an interview with James Jones, who wrote the classic book on this subject, the classic biography of Bad Blood is the title of the book, and goes into the whole background of the Tuskegee study and how they let these men die. And then, of course, when the public heard about it, they were infuriated. And of course, one of the people in the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare resigned, but they really didn't think there was anything wrong with it. And the public health officers, many of them to this day, do not think there's anything wrong with it. In fact, I knew one of the men who was in the CDC at that time. He was a dermatologist, and he was actually there at the very end of that study. He was in charge of the division that was in charge of the study. And when I asked him about it, he said, they, of course, picked men with syphilis that had it for a year or two, and so they weren't going to infect anybody with it. And it was so important from a scientific point of view. They knew what syphilis did to the white people because they'd done the study in Norway or in Scandinavia, and we wanted to find out what would happen to the minds and the bodies and the hearts of the black man here. It was done for science. And at that point, why I ceased to have any respect for this man, because there really are people out there who have a Nazi mentality, who see nothing wrong with experimenting on large numbers of people. Well, first the study ended in 1971, but long before that, another mass experiment had been started on the American people, and that was with the polio vaccine. And the original polio vaccine was grown in the kidney of the rhesus monkey. The original one was a Salk vaccine, and that was to be tested before it was going to be given to the public. And the public was told, "Oh, this has been tested by the National Institute of Health and found to be safe." But the truth of the matter it was found to be unsafe because Dr. Bernice Eddy, who worked at the National Institute of Health, actually took samples of the vaccine, and it was put out by four or five manufacturers, but one of them was a Qatar vaccine, where they had not inactivated the live vaccine sufficiently. She gave it to monkeys, and they came down with polio. She reported that to her superiors, and their response was, "Well, would you like some vaccine for your family?" She couldn't believe that. Well, anyway, they gave it, of course, knowing full well that it was going to produce polio, and over 100 people died, and many, many people were paralyzed as a result of that. And they knew exactly what was happening, and there was, of course, a shake-up. I think that the Secretary of Health and Education had to resign at the time. And then, of course, they came up with the Sabin vaccine. And the Sabin vaccine was also grown in the kidney of the rhesus monkey, and that was what they put on the sugar cube. It was an attenuated virus, and it was given to literally everybody in America, everybody in the world. And then Dr. Eddy, who, of course, instead of being rewarded and applauded for having found out that the Qatar vaccine was infected and was going to kill people, why, she was demoted and put over into a laboratory where, of course, she was working with cancer viruses. Nobody thought that that would ever turn into anything, but she stuck back into the polio lab, and she looked at the cultures, and she came to the conclusion that the cells were dying, and there was probably a cancer virus in the polio vaccine we gave to hundreds of millions of people. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have open lines this evening. Give us a call of 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to discuss what we're talking about. We're talking about the history of vaccines and the terrible things that they have done to our population and to our children, because today 1 in 6 children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality. They have autism, or they have ADD or ADHD or learning disabilities. And I believe most of this is related to the poisons in the vaccines, the aluminum and the mercury, that they know are poisonous to the brain of a developing child, and they've given it anyway as part of a mass experiment your children are being used in, for mass experiment, just the way that our government used those black men between 1931 and 1971. Because, you see, the sins of the parents are visited on their children and on their grandchildren. Well, anyway, of course, the first polio vaccine was found to have a live polio virus in it. That was the Salk, pardon me, that was the Salk vaccine. And then, of course, they began to produce the Sabin vaccine. It was a kill vaccine. It was killed with formaldehyde, and of course, it was given to people in the United States, literally to every adult, every child. I can remember going to some sort of a stadium or playing field, and everybody was given the vaccine on a sugar cube. But then, of course, after literally hundreds of millions of doses of this have been given in the United States and throughout the world, with no long-term study on this at all to show if there might be deleterious effects, though they wanted, of course, to get this on the market immediately without any long-term studies. Dr. Bernice Eddy, who had found that the original dose, the original Salk vaccine, actually had live virus in it, and 100 people were killed and hundreds were crippled because the U.S. Public Health Service knowingly gave a vaccine that they knew was unsafe. Dr. Bernice Eddy snuck into the laboratory and found that in the Sabin vaccine cultures, which were being grown, in the cultures that were being grown in the kidney tissue from the rhesus monkeys, that the cells were dying, and she came to the conclusion that there might be a cancer virus there, and so she got some of the vaccine. She began injecting it into hamsters, and wherever she injected it into hamsters, like, she got tumors. In fact, she found that this produced consistently mesotheliomas in hamsters, which is a tumor of the lining of the lung, the mesothelium there. So she reported it to her superiors, who vilified her and attacked her and told her she was stupid and didn't know what she was doing. But she went to a medical meeting and, of course, reported this. And Dr. Hilleman, who was the chief vaccinologist working for Merck, and certainly today has looked at the senior vaccinologist in the world, one of the two or three. Dr. Hilleman, for fear that Bernice Eddy might be correct, did experiments at the Merck company laboratories and found that there really was a cancer-producing virus in the polio vaccine that had been given to hundreds of millions of people. It was a monkey virus. They tested 40 of them. This was the 40th one, so it came to be known as SV40, and it produced cancers in animals. And at that point, why Merck, to their credit, withdrew their polio vaccine, and did one or two of the other vaccine manufacturers, but the others left theirs on the market until, of course, it exhausted their supplies, and literally tens of millions more people were infected with a simian virus that produces cancer. And now, if you read the papers within the last 2 months, why we found that cancer has surpassed the degenerative diseases, heart disease, and stroke as the greatest killer in America. Why is the incidence of cancer going? Well, we carry a book called The Virus and the Vaccine, going to the fact that they, of course, evaluate so many of the cancers today. And they find out, of course, that they contain the SV40, but they cannot tell the American people that. Why? Why we would lose confidence in the National Health Service? We would lose confidence in the Federal Drug Administration? We'd lose confidence in the CDC. And I think we should lose confidence in them, because they're not to be trusted. They're political bodies. And think of all those lawsuits that there would be out there if this public ever really understood that they had knowingly infected large numbers of people with a cancer-producing virus, the SV40 virus. If you haven't yet read the book, The Virus and the Vaccine, why, it is available through Radio Liberty. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. But much of what I've told you, actually, you can find in my newsletters, June and July of the year 2002. Or, for the best source of information, would a book called The Health Century. It was written by Dr. Edward Shorter, at the instigation of the National Institute of Health. The National Institute of Health commissioned the book. Dr. Shorter wrote it based upon the records of the National Institute of Health and what happened to Dr. Bernice Eddy, who found out that there was a cancer virus in the polio vaccine we gave to literally hundreds of millions of people. And what was the reward? Why, of course, she was stripped of her laboratory position. She was chastised. She was sent to a laboratory, never allowed to ever give a talk again at any institution. Tragically, that was her reward. for saving so many lives. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to give us a call. This is Open Lines, but I'm simply discussing the background of the vaccinations that we've been giving. And, of course, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to discuss this subject. When, of course, they found out about the cancer virus in the cultures of the kidneys of the green monkey, or the tissues, cultures of the green monkey, pardon me, of the rhesus monkey, they changed over to the green monkey. And of course, they had monkey cytomegalic viruses there. And so, by changing from the rhesus monkey to the green monkey, then we've all got, most of us have, these monkey cytomegalic viruses, which can produce all sorts of progressive degenerative central nervous system disease. But, well, we don't want to tell the American people that. About 10% of people in colleges have been tested, and at least in one study, and found to have these viruses. A significant number of children who have these various mental abnormalities have these monkey viruses, these cytomegalic viruses, but they can't let the American people know because we would lose confidence in our public health service. Well, let's go back and let's look at some of the terrible tragedies that come about because of the vaccines. First of all, there's the vaccine that was given to our servicemen back in about 1951. And this is covered in a book called Vaccine A, which we carry. And, of course, we have a four-tape set on Vaccine A, which you really need to get and listen to because it's my interviews with Gary Matsumoto. But they took about, 47,000 servicemen. They gave them an experimental influenza vaccine with a mineral oil adjuvant there to stimulate immunity. And then they followed them for 20 or 30 years until they died, and they've autopsied them. And there were so many of them who had holes in their brain and also damage to their brain that they gave up that idea. They decided they weren't going to continue using that adjuvant. But when, of course, the Gulf War came along, while they wanted to immunize our people very hurriedly going into the Gulf War, so they gave them an anthrax vaccine, and they added squalene to it. Well, of course, you know what happened after the first Gulf War. People began coming home complaining of all sorts of abnormalities. They would have rashes, they'd have asthma, they would have chronic pain, they would have the inability to think, they would have chronic fatigue, they would have diarrhea, they would have progressive neurological disease. We called it the Gulf War illness. The government denied it. It's very real. We have the government's own studies from the Veterans Administration that shows that it's real. They know it's real. They're lying. The latest figures show over 300,000 of the 600,000 men we sent to the first Gulf War are disabled by this terrible disease. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking about the Gulf War illness. If you haven't read the book, Vaccine A, or heard our four-tape set on Vaccine A, why, you need to get it, and you need to find out. This was a mass experiment that was done on our men. Of the 695,000 men we sent to the Gulf War, the government will admit, at least in the Veterans Administration study, that over 174,000 of them have been given a permanent disability because of Gulf War illness. We have from other sources, from several other sources that I think are probably far more reliable, over 300,000 are ill, chronically ill because of this great experiment using vaccines on our servicemen who went to the first Gulf War. What was so unconscionable is they've continued giving those anthrax vaccines until recently, and tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands more, now will be permanently disabled because of this vaccination program. Well, let's go to Gail, who's calling from New Mexico. Hi, Gail. How are you doing?
Hi.
And how are you listening to us?
Through the Internet.
Okay, fine. Very good. It's good to have you with us. Do you have a question or comment? And just speak up here, just a little soft.
Okay. I just wanted to ask if you know about mycoplasma.
Yes, I do. I know a little bit about it. I'm not an expert. Certainly the great expert on that is Dr. Garth Nicholson, and we have a number of interviews with him going into the background of mycoplasma. What would you like to know about it?
Have you ever seen that report written by Donald Scott?
Yes, I have.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's a great deal of truth in what Donald Scott has written, and I believe that the mycoplasm really, of course, has been around for a long time. Many of the Nazi scientists we brought over from Germany under Operation Paperclip were working with the mycoplasm, and they were trying to alter it to make it into a biological warfare agent. Now, we do know that the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology has a patent on the mycoplasmin, and in that they say you find this mycoplasm in AIDS, because every AIDS patient has this, as well as HIV and virus infection. They also, you'll find it in chronic fatigue syndrome, you'll find it in fibromyalgia, and they list two or three other conditions where it's found. So, yes, the mycoplasm is prevalent throughout our society. It's been spread. It was developed initially by our government as a biological warfare agent, and it has on the realm of the cell of this one of the genes that you find in the HIV virus. Isn't that interesting? Anything else you'd like to know? It can produce all sorts of chronic disability and chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. And as I say, you find it in almost all AIDS cases.
Yes. Doctors don't really look into that when a lot of these people complain of having fibromyalgia or arthritis.
You're absolutely right. There have been doctors, and I've talked to some of them, who felt that much of the rheumatoid arthritis and the lupus that were out there, these autoimmune diseases, were triggered off by mycoplasma infections and would respond to antibiotic infections. In fact, a very good friend of mine had very, very similar symptoms, and he was worked up. They couldn't find any evidence of an infection, but they gave him a two-week course of doxycycline, and he's back in his great fighting form. In fact, that's Lieutenant Colonel Greg Roberts. I don't think he'd mind my mentioning that, and he's going to be our guest in a week or two. But yes, the thing is, it's very hard to test for mycoplasma because it hides in the cells, and the only way you can really do that is with some very, very special testing, a polymerase, and I can't even pronounce it, but it's certain types of analysis. Dr. Garth Nicholson can either do that or tell you where you can get that done. You can go to his website at immed.com. It's either .com or .org, but look it up, and certainly they can tell you how to get the test for the mycoplasm, because it can trigger off all sorts of these autoimmune diseases, and the average doctor doesn't even know how to test for it.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Gail calling from New Mexico. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. So we were talking about, of course, the scourge of vaccines on the American people and this terrible vaccine. Hey, well, then, of course, they came up with this idea we were going to have to come up with a cure for hepatitis B or a vaccine. And I've already pointed out that of the homosexuals who took the initial hepatitis B vaccine, which was an experimental vaccine back in 1978-79 in San Francisco, 79 and 80, why 75% of them came down with AIDS and died, or most of them are dead. Do you think that just happened by accident? And if you look at the maps of Africa where they gave the experimental hepatitis B vaccine in Africa, shaw shucks, that's where we have so much AIDS today. Do you think that is just a coincidence? Dr. Garth Nicholson has told me that several people who worked on creating the AIDS virus have come to him and said, we had no idea this was ever going to be unleashed. And, of course, these people would not want their names out. They'd be afraid for their lives. In fact, if you notice, there have been, I don't know, 30 or 40 microbiologists who've all died recently and within the last few years, very strange, unexplained deaths. The last one with multiple stab wounds killed him. He was stuffed in the trunk of his car that was set on fire. I don't think they're going to call this one a suicide like they've called so many of the others, but I know that Dr. Gary Glum has written a book called Full Disclosure. That's Gary Glum's book, Full Disclosure. You can probably find it on Amazon. It's out of print, but he tells about a man who came to him, a microbiologist, who's dying of pancreatic cancer, who says, I want you to know the truth. I was part of the group that developed the AIDS virus. And, of course, then he writes this whole book going into the background of that. A recent survey, the recent Gallup poll of blacks, shows that 50% of the blacks believe that AIDS is a man-made disease and it's targeted on blacks. Now, have you ever heard of anything so paranoid? despite the fact, of course, that if you are a black woman, you have 20 times the chance of getting HIV infection and AIDS of a white woman. And if you've read my book, AIDS, Untold Story, published in Medical Sentinel, we'll be glad to send you a free copy if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's AIDS, The Untold Story. It's just my article that I wrote. I point out that scientifically they know that this disease has a predilection for blacks. It is specifically designed, in my estimation, to kill off blacks. And if you get the article from the PNAC website, Project for the New American Century, their website, newamericancentury.org, newamericancentury.org, pull down their treatise on rebuilding America's defenses and read it, bind it, and read it over and over again. You'll find out how happy they are that now we have the ability to create diseases that will target specific races. Now we have the ability to create diseases that will target specific races. Get it, read it, and help us to get the truth out across America. Maybe even get a copy of this this talk tonight and give it to some other people and ask them to check the sources of information and find out if it really could be true. Well, we've got Len calling in from Point Pleasant in New Jersey. Hi, Len. How are you doing?
Oh, good evening, Doctor. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Are you listening shortwave or internet?
Yes, shortwave. Yes.
Okay, very good. Are you on 5.835 or on 7.580?
5.835.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
Okay, what I've been hearing a lot of, like, you watch these commercials, and you mentioned before about rheumatoid arthritis, autoimmune diseases like that. There's a couple of different drugs that they specify, like Humira, Enbrel, and things like that, if I could mention these, I'm sorry. Whereby some of the side effects, however infrequent they might be, would be various tuberculosis or fatal blood infections or even lymphoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
These are the complications you get if you took these medicines?
Yes. I did a little bit of background. I went online, I think to WebMD it might have been, and I go to find out that these particular medicines are specifically engineered proteins, actually, that deal with the rheumatoid arthritis, and it's also used, some of them are used for Crohn's disease, too, and they concern themselves with something called the tumor necrosis factor. And what I was reading was that it's a possibility, unless I misunderstood, that somehow this could sometimes activate this particular protein, I guess, and they're thinking it maybe because it's autoimmune, maybe there might be a certain type of cancer, like lymphoma, which is the underlying cause of the autoimmune disease, because being as the immune system is compromised, and I was wondering if that was the case, pretty much.
I'm really not acquainted with those medicines. They've something coming along since I've got out of medicine. I can tell you a lot about Vioxx and Celebrex because I've been studying up on those, but I really don't know these specific medications. But I will tell you that when you depress the immune system, then, of course, you're going to get lymphomas and non-Hodgkin's lymphomas and all sorts of other cancers because our immune system is what keeps these cancers in check. And when you give people cortisone, you'll increase cancers because that decreases the immune system. And I assume that these are working in a very, very similar manner. You mentioned tuberculosis. Of course, if you have a normal immune system, you're not probably going to get tuberculosis. It'd be very rare. Suppress the immune system in the name of fighting off these rheumatoid arthritis and the other lupus and things of that sort. Suppress the immune system, and then you open yourself up for all sorts of cancers. So why don't we try to get to the cause of rheumatoid arthritis? And there's a great deal of evidence, and I can remember reading these articles back in 1975 when I was teaching at the University of the Orange Free State in South Africa, and I had the time to read all the medical journals, and there was a great deal of evidence at that time that many of these people had mycoplasma infections, and a significant percentage of those would respond if you gave them a good dose of doxycycline or other antibiotic.
Doxycycline, did you say?
Doxycycline, right.
Yes.
In fact, that's what this woman who called in earlier mentioning Don Scott's work, and I recommend that too. And of course, she'd put me in touch with a rheumatologist that I'd talked to that actually had treated a large numbers of people with rheumatoid arthritis and autoimmune disease with antibiotics, and the vast majority of them got well.
Oh, that's a very interesting fact indeed. One other thing, if I may. You mentioned, between regular arthritis, there's many different forms, osteoarthritis is probably the most common, and then rheumatoid arthritis, how come the osteo is not the autoimmune and the rheumatoid is? Just out of curiosity.
Well, because they're entirely different types of arthritis. I mean, you can have people with pneumonia, and one type of pneumonia would be tuberculous pneumonia, and the other type would be a pneumococcal pneumonia, and another type would be mycoplasmic pneumonia. It's either different types. I mean, the arthritis simply means inflammation of the joint, just right. As pneumonia means inflammation of the lung. It's what causes it. And osteoarthritis is usually related to a degenerative arthritic process, and there are probably other factors that influence that, the mechanical disalignment, certainly degenerative process, and even predilection. For instance, I know I've had arthritis of both my hips and had them replaced. It's simply one of the things that happens to people. Whereas the autoimmune disease, like rheumatoid arthritis, something triggers off this autoimmune disease. You get an inflammation of the lining of the joint, and then that lining of the joint erodes in over the top of the articular surface and erodes away the cartilage there. So there are entirely different types of arthritis. Arthritis simply means inflammation of the joint.
Oh, I see. Now, that's a very interesting fact. I appreciate that.
Let me just bring up one interesting point for our listeners out there who've been reading about the Vioxx controversy, but they have never read Dr. Graham's testimony that he gave before the Senate. Now, you've heard that they're thinking of putting Vioxx back on the market because, of course, maybe it does double the incidence of heart disease, but after all, it's such a good medication, and of course, if they don't get it back on the market, why, this will be used by all the people who are suing Vioxx because they had heart disease or stroke. According to Dr. Graham, who was the assistant director of drug safety working for the FDA, in 1999, they knew, they had studies that showed that Vioxx increased the incidence of heart attacks sevenfold, 700%. So if you took Vioxx, you had a 700% increase of getting that, totally suppressed by the media. And they keep saying, well, yes, it doubles it. Well, there's a lot of difference between doubling the incidence of heart disease and sevenfold, wouldn't you think there? And why don't they ever mention that to the people? That's Dr. David Graham's testimony. It's available on the Internet. If you don't have it, we do have it available through Radio Liberty. You need to read what he said, not what people said that he said, and realize they're killing our people. According to him, between 89 and 139,000 people had heart attacks or strokes, and 30-40% of them died.
Well, that is very, very interesting.
Okay, we got to run. We got one more caller. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye-bye. And please get other people out there in New Jersey listen to our program, will you?
I sure will. Thanks again.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Let's go to Eric from Compton. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
Hey, Doc. I'm fine. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Hey, I'm glad I have an opportunity to talk to you. I work like 4 to 12, and I have to catch the archive programs.
Right.
Good. Three quick questions, if I might.
Okay, if we got time, go ahead.
Okay, I hope so. Are you familiar with who Charles Taze Russell and the Jehovah's Witness organization?
I'm really not that acquainted with the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Would you know or not if he was a Mason?
I really can't tell you, but the Jehovah's Witnesses came out of Masonry.
You're sure about that?
Yes, I am. Right, I've read that. I don't know where I can document it, but I'm sure I could go to people who are a lot smarter than I am who have the documentation. But Jehovah's Witnesses came out of Masonry.
That's what I heard, but I'm trying to verify that.
Right. Okay. What's the second question? That was an easy one.
Okay. So I've been working for Safeway for 35 years, and I've just noticed these policies that they're implementing, where they seem, you know, I do a little dibble dabble in the study of mind control and this one world government that's coming and how the things work in the system. And I've just seen these programs being implemented where they're trying to take away your individuality, And they have this group thing going.
Sure, this is all this sort of Peter.
Where's that coming from?
Peter Drucker, this corporate genius who introduced this corporate control systems into corporate America. Then he went, of course, into the government and the education, and now he is the guru that really is behind the church growth movement. It all has to do with manipulation and control of the individual. That's what's wrong with the church growth movement. It's not about Christianity. It's about control and manipulation.
And is it just coincidence that these companies, is this the guy that these companies are, whose techniques they're employing?
Absolutely. In fact, he started there 30 years or more ago. And he's I believe he's a transformational Marxist. It is how you control the individual and you control their thought process.
Okay, that's right. I see it. When they start making you responsible for other people's feelings, it started raising questions in my mind.
You're very, very perceptive, Eric, but that's what it's all about. We're going to take a break, and I want you to hang on, because I got to give you a chance for that third question, okay?
Thank you, Doc, I appreciate it.
Okay, fine. And this is Eric calling from Compton, California, and of course, I always enjoy having the opportunity to do open lines. Don't usually do it, because it takes a little while to prepare for it, but fortunately, we have all of these things written out in my newsletters. You want to get my June and July newsletters, 2002, they're up on the web, 2002, June and July. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Eric on the line. Go ahead, Eric. What's the third question?
Well, Doc, it wasn't really a question. It was just, I just wanted to compliment you on the way you handle your detractors. They're ranting and raving, and you just continue to ask them questions. You don't get upset, and I'm trying to employ that in my own life, because I have a tendency to get a little upset, and I start getting loud, and I just admire the way you handle it. I was listening on the archive program to that guy with the Mason thing, how he was just, yeah, I heard that.
That was a fascinating program. I'll tell you what, it's awfully hard sometimes not to get antagonistic, but you know, if you read how our Lord handled people when they would ask him these terribly impossible questions, you know, like giving him a coin, you know, should we, or asking him, should we pay taxes to Caesar,
knowing
no matter now how you answered the question, you were going to lose. If you say, don't pay taxes, then you become an enemy of Rome and they'll arrest you. Do pay taxes, then you got all the Jews against you. So, you know, he didn't answer the question directly, you know. Whose picture is on that? Give unto Caesar's, that is Caesar's, and unto God, that was God's. But so often, our Lord asked questions. And when people ask him a question, he would ask them a question. And that is many times the best way to actually get people to think and to challenge their own views. So,
I'm learning, Dr. Stan. I'm learning.
Will you just keep listening? And of course, I want you to get everybody down there in Compton listening.
You know I'm trying. It's an uphill battle, but you know I'm trying.
Well, I know you are. And of course, we have so much great information out. We have so many great listeners. If you can ever, welcome, you know, to tape any of my programs off the internet that you can and get other people to listen to them. And as long as you don't make a profit on them, why, you can copy anything.
I've got about 200 tapes, and I get four every month. I just pass them out to anybody who's willing to who has an ear.
But don't ever give them away. Lend them and let them, you know, want to have them back. That way they've got to listen to them. And if they listen to them, maybe something that I say or maybe something the guest says will at least intrigue their interest. That's all we can do. There's a great spiritual blindness out there. Our job is to try to pierce the darkness.
Absolutely.
God bless, and thanks
good,
so very much.
Good talking to you, Dr.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Eric from Compton, and of course we're going to be back here in just a moment as we, of course, wrap up this program here for this hour. An open line program as we've gone into the background of the vaccines. We haven't even got to the rotavirus vaccine or the original yellow fever vaccine or the contraceptive vaccine that they've used. Or so many of the other vaccines that they have used that have done so much damage to the American people. But I think that this, what we really need to do is realize that they know the mercury was in there, going to destroy the minds of our children. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, we've been talking about vaccines. Now, if you haven't got our four-tape set on vaccines, you really need to. We have a great four-tape set. on mercury and go into the danger of the amalgams in your fillings. And, of course, if you're a pregnant woman, that'll get into the brain of your child and, of course, will do severe damage. And then, of course, as soon as they get into the nursery, why they're, at least up until recently, they were giving them a hepatitis B shot with somewhere between 75 and 85% of the amount of mercury in it that was felt to be safe. So they were intentionally damaging the brains of our children. But remember what Bertrand Russell said. By diet, injections, and injunctions, why we can begin to mold the character of the children. That's what it was all about. And they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. We got a great four-tape set on vaccines. We have a great four-tape set on aspartame. We have two great four-tape sets on fluoride, and then we have a DVD on fluoride, and we have several books. Now, if you're going to get one book, get Russell Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. We're having a hard time keeping it in stock. It is certainly the best book because it covers vaccines, it covers fluoride, aspartame, mercury, all the things they're using to poison the brains of our children. 1 in 6 children, according to the CDC, has a neurodevelopmental abnormality, and our children, when they graduate from high school, cannot compete with the children from other countries because of the damage to their brains, I believe, not because the educational system has failed, although it certainly is a failure, but many of our children cannot think or think clearly. And, of course, there's a tremendous campaign being put on today to convince you there is no danger from vaccines, that there is no evidence at all that the mercury in the vaccines is doing damage, and they're leaving it in the influenza vaccine, and they're preparing a new vaccine for all of us. You may even be forced to take that. It's for the avian flu. We've never had a case, or if we have, not more than one or two here in America, but they're getting a vaccine for everybody here. And you better learn what we're telling you. You better get the documentation on this. And you better help us to get the information out across America. The only thing that's going to stop them from forcing every one of us taking this vaccine will be, of course, the fact that the American people understand. And if you haven't read that wonderful book by Tom Clancy called Rainbow Six, that's Rainbow Six. Get it and read it. It's a fictional story, but as Tom Clancy says in the beginning of the book, there's material here that the government doesn't want you to know. Rainbow Six. And then, of course, we want to remind you about my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because you can't understand anything we talk about unless you understand the true nature of the evil we face. My book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we're offering case lots of that, 62 books to the case. And if you'd like to get a case, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We've disposed almost three-quarters of the number that we had available. And, of course, we're going to do a large printing. You're not going to get them until the printing is out. But that'll be a couple of months from now, 6 weeks to 8 weeks right now. But this book will help you to reach others. And, of course, having 62 of them, well, you can lend them out, you can sell them, you can do whatever you want to with them. But we want you to get them in other people's hands. And we can begin touching more and more lives all across America. So remember, the number to call is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't seen my new video, it's called None Dare Call It Genocide. Got a lot of great information in it on just what we're talking about tonight. The vaccines, the mercury, the fluoride, the aspartame. And remember those four tape sets? And, of course, the book, The Fluoride Deception, the excellent video on fluoride. And then, of course, we want you to pray for America. We want you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. And again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. And so, well, we'll be back for the next hour. To those who are leaving our network, why, we wish you good night and Godspeed. We'll be back with you on Monday. And for the rest of you, don't even think of changing the dial, because we got a great program coming up. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. It's going to determine what the future will bring, and I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line John Spring, who has his own talk show in Southern California, in the Inland Empire now, but he's going to soon be down in San Diego area, and we'll let him put the information out. You'll be able to hear him on a regular basis. John does a great job. He's a professional geographer, taught at the university level, fascinated by what's going on, a tremendous amount of excellent information, and we're going to be talking with him about, well, maybe what's going on in the Middle East, but I just wanted to briefly mention one of the things I've noticed. I was reading today that the American government is encouraging the European Union not to ship military weapons to communist China. We don't want Europe to ship weapons to communist China because, of course, they're a military threat. And yet, the American government sent during the Clinton administration all of our secrets for how to MIRV intercontinental and intermediate range ballistic missiles to communist China. And we're told, oh, Bill Clinton did that because he got a couple of $100,000 in campaign contributions. So he told Loral, a corporation that was working with China, just go ahead and give him all of our military secrets. And what's wrong with this picture? We're doing everything we can today to build up the military potential of communist China ourselves. We have encouraged a trade policy that gives them a tremendous advantage over us. There's no way we can compete with their slave labor here in the United States. We encourage our countries to go over there. We give them special tax breaks. We assure them if their factories are ever nationalized, they'll get all their money back from us. So they can go over there. They don't have any environmental protection laws. They don't have the labor laws. They don't have the pensions. They can utilize the slave labor. We are transferring a great deal of our military technology to them. We're sending them Boeing aircraft, which are converting to military purposes, and yet we're telling the Europeans not to send the Chinese any military weapons. Now, what's wrong with this story? It's sort of like, we boycott Cuba. Everybody knows that Cuba is the enemy. It's headed by that wicked communist, this Fidel Castro, and yet I was just reading an article today where the American Coast Guard had intercepted a large supply of marijuana that turned it back over to Fidel Castro's government, and that burned it because they don't want the drugs in their country. Somebody tried to escape from Cuba, risking their lives to try to get to this country, braving the 90 miles of straits that they have to go through, and many of them don't make it. They die on the way. But if the Coast Guard can capture them before they get on shore here, why we turn them back over to Fidel Castro? Why would we do something like that? Is Fidel Castro really the enemy that he's made out to be? Well, most people don't really know. The truth of the matter is, we brought Fidel Castro to power back in 1959. I know that because I interviewed the ambassador, the American ambassador to Cuba at that time, Mr. Earl Smith. Earl W. Smith, and one of these days we'll give you an opportunity to see my interview with Ambassador Smith as he tells you how we brought Fidel Castro to power, knowing full well he was a communist, but we can't tell the American people that, or nobody ever asked why Fidel Castro was here interviewing David Rockefeller back in 1995. Why would the head of this great capitalist nation ours, David Rockefeller, the most powerful man in the world, meet with Fidel Castro, the wicked communist ruler of Cuba? Well, maybe things are not at all what they appear to be. We'll be back in just a moment here with John Spring. Well, this is Dr. Stan and our guest this evening, John Spring. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, Dr. Stan, as usual, it's always a pleasure to be on your program. I always enjoy our dialogue, and I always learn so much.
Well, I always learn a great deal from you, and that's why I enjoy having you on, because you have contacts, you've done a lot of research, a lot of hard work. Let's get your website out right now, and then we'll get it out several times during the program. And so don't be bashful about pushing your website.
Okay. If people want to get more in-depth knowledge about what we're going to be talking about tonight or what I've spoken about in the past, I welcome everyone to go to my website, which is World Strategy. That's one word, worldstrategy.netfirms.com. And there you will find articles about Taiwan, China, the Middle East, Afghanistan, and I think it will be of interest because, interestingly, practically every one of these articles was written several years ago, and yet I haven't had to make any significant modifications whatsoever because they are even truer now than they were then. So I'll let the listeners judge for themselves when they go to my website.
Well, you know, there are all sorts of interesting things. I think one of the most dynamic things I've ever heard was this week when the president made gave a speech. In fact, Jay Leno even had it on his program with it. The president said, "I think it is ridiculous for anybody to say that we're thinking of attacking Iran, but everything's on the table."
Everything is.
Everything's on the table. In other words, it's ridiculous to say we're attacking Iraq, but we may attack Iraq. Everything's on the table. In fact, Jay Leno had, as the president in the background, you can see that these three Arabs, you know, with their turbans on, obviously they're Muslims, with their beards, and they're drinking tea. And the president says, "We want you to know that it's ridiculous to say we're going to attack Iran." And of course, they're all clicking their teacups together and smiling and slapping one another on the back. And then the president says, "But everything's on the table." And suddenly, they're just spitting out. They see the spray of the tea that they're drinking. You know, because how can it be ridiculous to talk about everything's on the talk about attacking Iraq and then saying that everything's on the table, which means we can attack Iraq if we need to? So what they're doing is giving it a dual message, and they're doing that intentionally to confuse people. And as I had the opening in my program talking about how we tell the Europeans not to supply military supplies to communist China,
yes,
and if we do that, we tell the Europeans they shouldn't, of course, fund or help Fidel Castro, and yet we're helping Fidel Castro, and we have helped him ever since he went into power, but we can't let the American people know that. Something's wrong with the picture.
Very much so.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring, and certainly I think the most disquieting thing of this last week or so was the death of the Lebanese leader in Beirut. This massive car bomb that killed a number of people and wounded almost 100, and of course immediately the American government and Condoleezza Rice said the Syrians did it. Now, how do they know the Syrians did that? And then, of course, we're making threats against the Syrians, and they've got to pull all their troops out of Lebanon, and we pull our ambassador out of Syria, which is almost a prelude, in many occasions, to war. Tell me, what's your take on what's going on over there? How does our government know that the Syrians did this? And is it possible that the Syrians didn't do it, that maybe the Israelis did it, or some renegade intelligence agency from some country did this? How can we say without equivocation the Syrians did it?
Well, Dr. Stan, I don't think we can any more than we can blame the Taliban directly for 9/11, but obviously that did not interfere at all with our invasion of Afghanistan. Of course, the American people were not aware then that the invasion of Afghanistan was prepared years in advance of 9/11, just as was the war, the Gulf War II in Iraq, planned well in advance of 9/11. But for some reason, it takes an excuse like 9/11, or perhaps in this more recent situation, the bombing of the former leader of Lebanon, to stir up the pot, so to speak, so that we will again go into another war, either with Syria or Iran, or possibly both, because Iran and Syria have a very close alliance and always have since Yevgeny Primakov of the former Soviet Union more or less established a legacy amongst those nations as well as Sudan and Iraq. So it's rather interesting that all of a sudden now that we are blaming Syria at a very convenient time when we might consider the option of invading the nation and the government in Damascus.
Well, of course, it would be much easier to invade Syria than it would Iran. I mean, Syria is only about a third the size of Iran by my calculations. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but it would be much easier to invade Syria than it would be to Iran, because Iran has a very, very powerful army. Iran, of course, has chemical, and apparently they do have chemical and weapons, and we know that they have some nuclear devices, at least according to Dr. Yosef Budansky, who is the director of the division on
unconventional warfare, yeah, and terrorism.
Terrorism and unconventional warfare for the Republicans there in the House of Representatives. Right. So, I mean, Budansky has written about this for 4 or 5 years, that the Iranians had actually purchased nuclear weapons, atom bombs, some years ago, and they have probably 3 or 4 of them already. And, of course, they're trying, of course, to be able to manufacture them on their own, but they have several operational ones at the present time. And, of course, thanks to American foreign policy, we gave the technology to be able to have very accurate intercontinental and intermediate range ballistic missiles. We gave it to the communist Chinese, they gave it to the North Koreans, and the North Koreans gave it to the Iranians. So now the Iranians, with American technology, have the ability to target Israel, they have the ability to target our troops, they have the ability to target Europe. So, gee, we're going to have to do something because the wicked Iranians have this power. And everybody's forgotten that we brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power back in 1979 when the CIA toppled the Shah of Iran. People have forgotten. They have such short memories.
Yes, we do, Dr. Stan, unfortunately, as a nation. Just as geographically we are illiterate compared to the other students throughout the rest of the world, we have very little knowledge, even of our own nation, which is sad enough, but we're completely ignorant about the rest of the world for all practical purposes. And even though we've had some very outstanding field agents when it comes to intelligence gathering, we've had apparently very poor intelligence analysts, the individuals who actually can decipher or make something out of the information that is sent to them to determine whether it is of significance or something very minor that does not require further action.
Or maybe we have people in key positions who know what's going to happen and specifically do not act against it because they want a crisis to occur to justify a reaction by our country. For instance, I read just today that we were thinking of wanting to cite Hezbollah, the Army of God, as being a terrorist organization. And I'm wondering, you want to cite Hezbollah as being a terrorist organization? Why, they were responsible for the terrorist bombing back in 1983, and the government knew that when they blew up our barracks and blew up our embassy in Beirut back in 1983. Why are you just getting around to citing them as a terrorist organization? Why have you waited 22 years before doing what you should have done a long time ago and taken action against them? We have never gone after Hezbollah. And you have to ask yourself why we didn't try to avenge the death of over 200 Marines back in 83 and the blowing up of our embassy, and why we're just now getting around to citing Hezbollah as a terrorist organization?
It's very strange, Dr. Stan. I cannot believe the foreign policies and national security of our nation at this time. It seems as if, in all honesty, the leadership of this nation has always been in jeopardy over the past, during my entire life, so to speak. As a private citizen, I've tried to do what I can to call some things to the attention of some of our leaders in Washington over a period of 40 years, but it's very difficult. At this particular time, Dr. Stan, there is no one basically that I feel that I can contact other than someone such as Joseph Badonsky, but he just doesn't have any more authority than I do, basically, as a private citizen, even though he is one of the top intelligence experts in the nation. It's sad that you can have an administration such as the Bush administration who will not heed warning from people who've had an outstanding track record on so many past events that are now part of American history, completely ignore these people, and yet take advice from someone like Dr. Condoleezza Rice or Donald Rumsfeld, who's been a bureaucrat for most of his lifetime as an adult. It's just sad that so little information is being received from the outside, and yet, ironically, it has been only those rare moments when leaders have received information from the outside, other than government agencies themselves, that we have been successful. Because, unfortunately, you have the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, you have the Trilateral Commission, and, of course, the Bilderbergers, who have tremendous control over our government agencies and government leaders and members of Congress, to the point where it's almost impossible for a private citizen nowadays to get in a word edgewise.
Well, I don't think that they really want anything from the people. I think there is an agenda, and I think it is laid out. It's been for a long time. In fact, there is an article. In fact, it's my March 2003 Radio Liberty letter, in which I quote from a Nightline program with Ted Koppel. And this is what Ted Koppel said on the 5th of March, 2003. Anybody would like to check this out, my March newsletter, 2003, it's up on the internet at radioliberty.com. But this is what he said. A secret blueprint for U.S. global domination reveals that President Bush and his cabinet were planning a premeditated attack on Iraq to secure regime change even before he took power in January of 2001. It's been called a secret blueprint for U.S. global domination. A small group of people with a plan to remove Saddam Hussein long before George W. Bush was elected president, and 9-1-1 provided the opportunity to set it in motion. Not since Mein Kampf has a geopolitical punch been so blatantly telegraphed years ahead of the blow. Now, we actually have the video, we have the transcript from Nightline, and you can get that either up on the net or directly from Nightline there. And, of course, they interview William Kristol, who at that time was the chairman of the Project for the New American Century. And William Kristol, who, of course, works very closely with Rupert Murdoch, one of the most dangerous men, I believe, in my opinion, in the world. Rupert Murdoch, who, of course, controls much of the media, one of the five dominant media corporations in the world, and, of course, he funded the Weekly Standard with Kristol as the editor of, and, of course, William Kristol, chairman of the Project for the New American Century, and anybody who has not been to their website, newamericancentury.org, that's newamericancentury.org, needs to go there and find out that they were planning on the war with Iraq at least in 1998 and probably long before that, but they were only organized in 1997. But their members were intent upon this war, and, of course, what happened on 9/11 was simply a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. That was their term that they used, saying, we won't be able to pursue our plan unless there's a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. You'll find that wording in something called Rebuilding America's Defenses. It's on their website, newamericancentury.org. Go there, get the information, document what we're saying, and then help us to let the American people know that they planned this war. It had nothing to do with Saddam Hussein. It certainly had nothing to do with democracy. It had everything to do, of course, with global domination, and, of course, I believe, it is specifically designed to usher in World War III. We're going to be back in just a moment with John Spring. We'll welcome your calls from out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is John Spring. And, of course, we hope that if you're out there in the listening audience, you will try to prove us wrong. You will go to their website, newamericancentury.org, and read their material. And if I could make a suggestion, if you will pull down my newsletter on March of 2003 from radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. March 2003, and then of course you can index read their material and read what material we have, and it will help you to understand it so you don't get lost in all the verbiage. But it's very obvious this whole war is planned, and of course this is the first in a series of wars. In fact, in the Nightline program we mentioned, it was on March 5th with Ted Koppel, William Crystal talked about going to war with Syria and a regime change in Iran and a regime change in North Korea and a regime change in Saudi Arabia. In fact, Wesley Clark in his book Winning Modern Wars, General Wesley Clark, talks about going to the Pentagon after the war, Iraq war had started, and talking to one of his friends who said, oh, we've been planning this for a long time. The plan has been, we've gone over this again and again, how to clean the swamp, meaning, of course, replace all the governments in the Middle East. So an awful lot of American boys are going to die, and, of course, I fear that there are going to be terrible repercussions because there are repercussions. There is a blowback. And, of course, when the people of the Europe started the First World War, they had no idea it was going to end up with 100,000 men, between 100 and 200,000 men being killed every single month. When they started the Second World War, and, of course, they could have avoided the Second World War if they let Adolf Hitler know that that England and France opposed what he was doing. They'd given him the go-ahead and encouraged him to do what he was doing. If you don't believe that, you need to read Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, or read Albert Speer's book. I have that in my library. And Speer said the only time he ever saw Hitler flustered was when he was told that England and France had attacked him. Because why? Because England and France had been encouraging him at every turn. In fact, the reason that Rudolf Hess flew to England was to visit with members of the Round Table, and you'll find that in a book called Prisoner Number 7 by Colonel Eugene Byrd, or in a book called A Motive for a Mission by the son of the Duke of Hamilton. Hitler thought that these people were working with him. They were sending that message. They were encouraging him to expand the German Empire, telling him, go ahead, we're solid behind you. And then, of course, suddenly we're in World War II, and here between 50 and 60 million people died. I wonder how many will die in World War III. What are your thoughts on that, John?
Well, Dr. Stan, I'm very concerned about what lies ahead of us, both here and abroad. When I say abroad, I mean our young men and women who will be drafted to serve in the U.S. Armed Forces, or perhaps I should not say U.S. Armed Forces, but U.N. Armed Forces, the United Nations Armed Forces, rather than the American Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, and Coast Guard.
But, of course, if we can kill off our young men fighting overseas, there will be nobody to defend America when America itself comes under attack.
Absolutely. This is another concern that I have. I feel that a lot of these wars that are transpiring and will still occur overseas are basically a detractor, a divergent, so that we will find ourselves in greater peril here within the United States. Now, years ago, I was given...
Hold that thought. We're going to have to bring our stations back on board with it. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But give us a call if you have a question or comment for our guest this evening. Or John was just saying, was we were talking about what I believe is the imminence of World War III and the fact that as our boys go overseas and die, and of course as they become increasingly large numbers of them ill because of the Gulf War illness, which has incapacitated between 200,000 and 300,000 1,000 of the courageous young men that we sent overseas to fight in the first Gulf War. I was given the figure today of 306,000. The official government figure from the Veterans Administration report of September last year was 174,000. But if one person became ill because of an experimental vaccine that was given, somebody should be held responsible. But these men will be too ill to fight for America. And then, of course, there's more and more are sick and wounded and disillusioned. And there are said to be somewhere like 20,000 of the returning veterans have strange illness, very, very similar to the Gulf War, one war illness, and they can't get any treatment from the Veterans Administration. Take them 6 months to get an appointment. And when you get in, they won't treat you because the Veterans Administration has been told there is no such entity. It doesn't exist, even though all the people have similar symptoms. Well, pick up the story there, John.
Well, what you're saying, Dr. Fan, is so true. The suicide rates within our armed forces of those deployed in the Middle East have gone up considerably. This is, I think, been reported even recently in the news media, by the news media. And regarding the Gulf War syndrome, it appears that if under certain circumstances a veteran comes down with it, that they might possibly be treated under other areas, but to be treated actually for the Gulf War syndrome, or if it's too long after they've been discharged, they may not be treated at all. It's a very tragic situation. We're having a lot of reservists and National Guardsmen come back who will probably never receive the benefits of the full-time armed force personnel, and as a result they will probably spend the rest of their lives without any adequate treatment unless they are financially capable of acquiring additional medical help at their own expense. It's just a travesty, Dr. Stan.
It really is, and this is a great thing. And if you know anything about the Gulf War illness, these people have rashes, they have asthma and breathing abnormalities, they have chronic pain, they can't think, they can't concentrate, they have arthritis, they have diarrhea, they will have progressive neurological diseases, they'll have chronic fatigue syndrome. They'll this chronic fatigue or these entities, these symptoms are so similar. So very similar to the Gulf War I illness. It's all exactly the same illness. And the government knows what it is, but they're not going to tell the American people. And just as exactly as they know the terrible effects that they've, damage that they've done to the minds of our children, because the government studies are there and they're covering them up, and we can talk about that some other time, but they do know that the thimerosal in the vaccines we've been giving our children is destroying their minds. They have the statistics, and when Dr. Mark and David Geyer finally got into this CDC special secret files and got the information, got it out and published, what happened? Why, they immediately sealed the files so nobody could ever go in to verify it. It's the greatest cover-up of all time, and it's being covered up by our media today. We're telling us there's no relationship between vaccines and, of course, the explosion of autism and mental deficiency and neurodevelopmental abnormalities in our children. And if they would do that to our children, what would they do to our troops?
Yes. As I said before your short break, I was given a copy of a map produced by Maurice Gomberg on October of 1941, during the time of the Roosevelt administration, just prior to the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
Now, who is Maurice Gomberg?
Maurice Gomberg was a cartographer, and because I'm a professional geographer, a friend passed a copy of this wall map on to me for my inspection, and I was just fascinated by the information on this map, which was more or less a prediction as to what would occur after the post-war, which we had not yet declared.
In other words, were we in the war at that time? Or
no.
We hadn't even entered the war, but it was all planned ahead of time, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely.
They knew exactly what was going to happen. They knew the Japanese were going to attack. They'd done everything to provoke the attack. And
yes,
then they left the boys there at Pearl Harbor to die. But you needed an incident like the Lusitania, like Pearl Harbor, like November 11th. get the American people to go to war. We're going to be right back here with John Spring and welcome your calls from 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, John is telling us about a map that was drawn up by Maurice Gomberg back before the Second World War, and he was given a copy of that. Pick up the story there, John.
Well, what I found so fascinating for the Western Hemisphere was that all of North America, from basically Panama to Alaska and Canada and Greenland, would become part of a new nation that would be referred to as the United States of North America.
Did that include Central America, too, or was it just the United States?
It would include Central America and the Caribbean as well as Mexico.
Okay.
So all of Middle America, the United States, and Canada, for all practical purposes.
Right.
And all of South America, from basically Panama to Chile and Argentina, would become all one nation, known as the United States of South America.
Well, this is exactly what CAFTA, the CAFTA agreement, is all about. Is to, first of all, unite us trade-wise, and then take down the borders, and then unite our currency, and then unite our government. But they can't tell the American people this is part of a long-range plan. And you're suggesting it was even part of a long-range plan in 1991?
Back in 1941.
1941, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Now, when did you get this map?
I received a copy of this map about 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I was just fascinated by this map because it is very similar to basically what the geographers in Moscow were planning during the Stalin regime in terms of passing on to the rest of the world through the UN and other world organizations and institutions such as the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Endowment for Peace, and the Ford Foundation. So I became very alarmed when I examined a copy of this map because it basically predicted the future of things that have not yet occurred. Also, it indicates areas throughout the world where things have occurred. For example, within the Middle East, an area was designated as Hebrew land, which, of course, the name of Israel did not come into being until just a few days before that Jewish state declared its independence.
1948, right.
Yes. And the only thing that is a little bit different from the map and the map of Israel today is that the proposed map of Israel would be considerably larger than the present state of Israel.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, John. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John is telling that he was given a copy of this map drawn up by Maurice Gomberg before the World War began, back in 1941. And, of course, they had laid out a plan at that time. This was the way they felt it was going to be, where all of North and Central America would be united into one country. All of South America would be united into one country. And, of course, did they talk at all about Europe at that time, John?
Very much so. It indicated that there would basically be a united Europe.
Now, did it include Russia, do you recall?
No. Russia, as it was then designated as the Soviet Union, would be a separate entity, and most of Germany and the Eastern European nations would fall under the Soviet sphere of influence, including, I might add, Iran. I found that to be of great interest. Iran would be included as part of the Soviet Union, or at least an alliance would be drawn to include that within Moscow's sphere of influence.
And that's really so interesting. But of course, because it, up until 1979, America was, Iran was in the American sphere of influence until we toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollah committee to power, who then aligned himself with Russia. Now, why would we do something that when the Shah of Iran was our ally and, of course, the Ayatollah was our enemy? Why would we bring an enemy to power in Iran? But then why would we bring an enemy to power in Cuba? We brought Fidel Castro to power, I know, because I talked to the ambassador.
Yes, we did.
We brought the Sandinista to power in Nicaragua, and I talked to people who were very close to Somoza. We brought the Marxists to power in Rhodesia, and I know because I talked to the premier of South Africa, who told me exactly what was going on. And, of course, we brought the Marxists to power in South Africa. We brought the Marxists to power in Rhodesia. We brought them to power in Southwest Africa. We brought them to power in Angola. And they're still being financed by Chevron Oil Company today. Why are you doing these foolish things unintentionally?
Yes, and I might also add, of course, the State Department brought Mao Zedong to power in China.
And yes, and we're still financing both China and Russia today. In fact, Joel Skelton the other day was saying that he has evidence that on a regular basis we're sending airplane loads full of American currency over to Russia and giving it to the hierarchy that then is spending it, and that is why the dollar is so prevalent in Russia today. Why would we be sending money to Russia? Well, maybe for the same reason. We gave the Russians the plates so they could print our occupation currency after the Second World War.
Yep.
And that's covered in a wonderful book called From Major Georgian's Diary. A few Americans know we financed the Soviet occupation of Eastern Europe. We financed the communists ever since their inception back in 1918, creating the best enemy that money could buy. Go ahead, John.
Yes. I received a similar book to that. I think it was titled The Enemy at His Back. The Enemy at Its Back, or something to that title, which basically divulged all of what you just alluded to regarding what we passed on to the Soviet Union during and right after the Second World War, even before war was declared by the United States against Japan and Germany. But for some reason, the American government, through its various agencies, has been supporting various Marxist regimes throughout the world and enabling them to acquire control of other nations throughout the world. And yet, supposedly, during the Truman administration, we had a policy of containment. But I think what we're told and what we actually practice are two different things, just like some crooks keep two sets of books. And we've been deceived as a nation ever since I've been a child, if not longer than that, by our government. And until the American people begin to wake up and have the analytical tools to understand what my counterparts in the former Soviet Union and in the People's Republic of China are planning, we won't basically have a clue as to how they're going about it. Practically all of these plans that we've alluded to on the part of the Marxists have been planned by their key geographers. Now, unlike here in the United States, within the former Soviet Union, within Russia today, and I think it's also true within Beijing or in the People's Republic of China, to become a geographer is more difficult than becoming a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. Now, people might scoff and laugh. How could that be possible? Well, the curricula is so difficult and so mind-boggling that probably 90% of the students are eliminated, and they go into other fields such as perhaps international studies or regional studies or international law. But those few that are able to get through the four-year curricula of the geography department at, let's say, Moscow State University, they become the key advisors within the Kremlin to the president, to the premier, basically. And they plan the world strategy of world domination, which still is going on in a very secretive manner. And this is, of course, kept from the American people. Now, a lot of people have heard of the Gorbachev Foundation, for example. But unlike the little office in the Presidio, the former headquarters for the Sixth Army in the San Francisco area, the real Gorbachev Foundation exists in Moscow. It's a square kilometer in area in terms of size, and it has a staff larger than what we have at the Pentagon, and these people are generating and working on ideas on world dominance, what they can pass on as part of the UN's agenda, and basically we don't even have a clue that this is going on today.
Well, look, Christy, I think, John, I think our leaders do, because we have the list of the people who attend the meetings or participate in the meetings of the State of the World Forum, Gorbachev State of the World Forum, and you'll be amazed that the people who go to the meetings or are participants or are fellows in his organization, people like George Herbert Walker Bush,
yes,
George Shultz, James Baker III, Ted Turner. Any of you who would like to see the list, we actually got them from the Gorbachev Foundation. We'll make them available to you.
I've met many of these people, by the way.
Right.
Go ahead.
And, of course, they are working closely with Gorbachev. But Gorbachev is the power. They simply are following behind Gorbachev. Now, why would they do that? I mean, Gorbachev's out of power. No, he's not out of power. He's one of the most powerful men in the world. He has written the plan for America and for the whole world. The new Ten Commandments, the Earth Charter. Pull it down off the web. Look at it. Look at point 10. You can understand why they are intent upon destroying our economy and redistributing our wealth. Get the Earth Charter written by Gorbachev. Understand, Gorbachev is one of that small clique of people who's ruling the world today, not because he is the ruler of Russia, but because he is part, in my estimation, of the Brotherhood of Darkness. Go ahead.
Yes, he is. We don't have to really use the word Marxism or international communism anymore, because as you pointed out, the Carnegie Endowment for Peace, the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, all of these so-called benevolent altruistic organizations which are able to be tax-exempt. In other words, these organizations do not pay any federal income tax that I'm aware of. And they, believe it or not, contribute very heavily, both financially and in terms of ideas, to the Gorbachev Foundation, which in turn interacts with these people. Now, the people that you alluded to, such as my old shipmate in basic training with the Coast Guard, Ted Turner, he would go to a ceremonial meeting. He might attend a banquet, a ceremony, perhaps a brief seminar or a symposium. But in reality, he would probably never get into the in-depth secretive study areas within the Gorbachev Foundation, which actually has two names. One is the Institute of Economic and Social Studies or Social Sciences, and the other is the Institute of Political Sciences. It's very interesting. And these two institutes compose the so-called Gorbachev Foundation that I was alluding to. And they are making the plans, which are being carried out almost like clockwork. And as I was saying earlier, diversions are created overseas so that we become distracted here at home on very important issues such as illegal immigration. And, of course, when we get into a war, let's say with Iran in the near future or Syria, we will completely forget when our congressmen decide almost in unison to vote in favor of both the Central American Free Trade Agreement and also the Free Trade Area for the Americas, known respectively as CAFTA and the FTAA. And when those come about, especially the FTAA or the completion of NAFTA, which CAFTA really is, we are going to lose our sovereignty, which means there will no longer be borders. So basically there will no longer be border patrol agents or custom agents. Basically, there will be no control of people coming and entering, just as is the case over in the European Union today, where all of the member nations are no longer required to have passports or visas or legal documents to go from one member nation to another. But the only drawback is that here in North America, when we go south of the border, we're entering the third world. Now, most of the European nations are on a much higher standard of living, relatively speaking. And so they don't have that contrast.
Well, we will have that here. We will, as I often love to say, we will soon raise the living standards of the average American to that of the Bolivian peasant. And people said that could never happen. Well, our living standards are gradually going down. Now we have to have two people working instead of one. And most Americans are overburdened with debt. And when the economy turns down, a lot of them are going to lose their homes, they're going to lose their cars, and they're going to lose their pension funds, and they're going to be impoverished, and that, I believe, is the master plan. But they can't tell the American people that. So what they have done is they've created a great diversion over the Middle East. It will have its purpose, but it is being used today as the diversion to see us, keep us from seeing what's happening here at home. And even though the vast majority of the American people, in one poll showed 96% of the American people did not want to make people who are here illegally legal residents of the United States, the Bush administration, which doesn't care one iota what the American people think, and so many of the elected representatives who will do whatever the Bush administration says, they are going to go ahead in one way or another and make the people who are here illegally, who have violated our laws, illegal residents of this country. And at that time, the America that we've known will cease to exist.
Yes, and Dr. Spann, it's going just on a time schedule, on a timetable, like clockwork, and the American people are completely asleep. And I still urge every American citizen to contact their congressman, and you will be surprised. There are many congressmen, for example, who have publicly stated time and time again for the last several years that they are supposedly the key leaders against illegal immigration and against illegal aliens receiving benefits here in the United States. But when you talk to their aides in Washington, it becomes very clear, and I've spoken to several aides of congressmen, very well-known congressman within the last 2 weeks, their congressmen intend to vote in favor of both CAFTA and especially the FTAA. It is shocking, Dr. Spann. It's hard to believe that our congressmen, the ones that we think of as patriots, would even consider CAFTA or the FTAA.
But of course the thing is that this does away with our borders. First of all, it creates a situation where people can move back and forth without passports. It's a prelude to, of course, merging our currencies and then merging our laws and merging our government and the loss of our constitutional guarantees of individual freedom under God. That is going to occur because our leaders hate God. They have another agenda. Their loyalty is not to the United States, not to our Constitution that they've sworn to uphold, but to this dream, this ethereal dream of the New World Order, the New World Religion.
Yes. And as recently as 2 weeks ago, Dr. Spann, there was a meeting held in Ottawa in which the Mexican, American, and Canadian government officials were present under NAFTA deciding what type of currency we will be having in the very near future, what laws will be changed or modified regarding the currency, customs, and everything else imaginable. And yet, people don't understand that the final stages of NAFTA have not yet been reached by a stretch of our imagination. We have barely scratched the surface on the policies that were approved for NAFTA back in 1993, and it's been well over 12 years since then, and yet only a few have actually been implemented. And if one takes the time to read through the material, you'll find that there are many other things that are going to occur, such as basically the abolition of states' rights, whereby the government of each state within the United States of America will no longer have the authority to determine which people from foreign countries who are members of the NAFTA, CAFTA, and FTAA nations are able to practice law within the United States, able to practice medicine, or become educators or other professions, or other tradesmen as well. So even though these people may not meet what we would consider our standards, they will, under NAFTA, be allowed to practice their various professions in the various states without having to pass our local bar exams.
And, of course, we're seeing what's happened in Europe today, where Great Britain, which is a very prosperous country, is having to spend £12 million every day to help finance the rest of the European Union that has brought in all the impoverished states of Eastern Europe. And, of course, the wealth of Europe is being funneled into the Eastern Europe because, after all, we have to have equality in this wonderful new utopian state that the Marxists are setting up in Russia. If you have not yet said the little book that we have called EUSSR, written by Vladimir Bukovsky, pointing out that the Trilateral Commission was working with Gorbachev 20 years ago to bring about the European Union, you need to get EUSSR. It's available from Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring. And we're just talking about what's going on with the massive influx, of course, of the illegal immigrants into this country. 10% of the budget of the state of California now goes to finance the illegal immigrants into our state, to provide for their education. They get, of course, especially a discounted education at our state universities. They are taking our health care benefits. They're getting welfare benefits. They're getting all sorts of benefits here. Approximately $10 billion, it's estimated, of the $100 billion of California's budget is going to fund the illegal immigrants. And then, of course, we have the bringing in new diseases with them. Leprosy had almost disappeared, but it's coming back again. All sorts of tuberculosis is coming in. All sorts of diseases like whooping cough, and they're all along the border states. All sorts of new diseases are plaguing the American people as a result of the fact that we are not trying to close our border. The Chinese were able to build a wall and separate China from the barbarians thousands of years ago, but we can't figure out how to do it here. The Romans built a wall across all of England to separate the barbarians in the north from, of course, the civilized Roman south. But we can't figure out how to guard our borders. What's wrong with this picture? And the truth of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, we have no intention of doing that, but they cannot tell the American people that the real agenda of the invisible government of the Brotherhood is to bring America into abject poverty, to allow unbridled immigration, and to destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. John, let's get your website out again, and of course, your parting thoughts.
Yes, I might also add, Dr. Stan, that I'm going to be on a different radio station starting the first Sunday in March, and that's going to be KCEO, which is 1000 on the AM dial, every Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. until 3 p.m. And that program will be covered on the Internet at www.kceoradio.com, kceoradio.com.
Okay, fine. How powerful is the station?
I believe it's only 2.5 kilowatts, but...
You mean to 2,500 watts?
Only 2,500 watts, but it does cover all of the San Diego area exceedingly well.
Of course it can, certainly with 2,500 watts, if it's well located, can
yes.
do that.
It's in a good location from what I understand, and I've even been able to pick it up on one of my radios here at home in Anaheim, so... It does have a good signal.
I'm so glad. Well, I want to thank you so very much for being with us, John. It's always a pleasure having you here.
Oh, Dr. Stan, not only is it a pleasure, it's a wonderful opportunity for me to share with other people.
Good night. Good night, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
Lord bless you, Dr. Stan.
Okay, fine. Well, our guest this evening has been John Spring, and again, his website is www.worldstrategy.netfirms.com. That's www.worldstrategy.netfirms.com. And then, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and this program, of course, heard on about 14 stations, I guess, between my network and RBN, which we're on, and, of course, we're on the two internets, we're on two shortwaves, and a whole flock of stations, but believe me, it's an expensive proposition. If you believe what we have to say is worthwhile, we hope many of you out there will certainly seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And when you do, you get our four best tapes of the month, you get our monthly newsletter. Now, if you're unable to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to send it to you. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then I would simply point out that some people just don't have the wherewithal to join the Radio Liberty family, so you can tell others about our program. Your job is to tell others, to make copies of the tapes, and you're welcome to make copies of the tapes or videos, anything we make, as long as you're not making a profit on them, and try to reach people with an understanding of what's going on. If you are in a position, I want to mention that we are offering a case of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's 62 books, and in a case, we have to offer them only by a case, because, of course, we're making them very easy for people to get. And, of course, the reason we're doing that is because we're going to have a massive printing, and we need to get a lot of those. We've actually disposed of almost three-quarters of the cases that we will be making available to the public. And so if you're interested in joining and getting a case, and then, of course, helping distribute that book, I think if you can get people to read it, you can change their lives. So the number to call is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, for a case of Brotherhood of Darkness. Then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get my new talk. It's called None Dare Call It Genocide. If you haven't yet seen my interview entitled The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or Brotherhood of Darkness, or Population Control, or the Sustainable Development, The Road to World Tyranny, or the Iraq, The Untold Story, all of these videos are available through Radio Liberty. In fact, you can even get the video special if you're interested in that. And then, of course, we have the other very professionally done videos, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, both are very, very well done, giving the background of biblical prophecy, and the other one, of course, is about taking us into the wars that we're involved in. The first one, Megiddo 1, is 2 hours and 15 minutes. The second one's 3 hours, in which I play a small part of where I talk about Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, one of the most evil women in the world. And, of course, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky was a Luciferian. She was a Mason, a co-Mason, and she worshipped Satan. She worshipped Lucifer. And you need to get her writings to understand so much of what's going on today, because many of her disciples are in key positions in the world today. And then, of course, we talk about the Georgia Guidestones. That's Megiddo 2. That if you haven't seen the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. You need to get that. And, of course, then you'll understand why Michael Jackson walks backwards. You'll understand why Michael Jackson walks backward. Most amazing film footage you've ever seen, I promise you. We've got lots of other great videos, amazing clips that will really change the way you look at the world. But right now, of course, this is the time when we ask you to pray for America, to pray for our leaders, our ministers, to remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.